The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
181?
Yes.
Yes.
And thank you, as we say each and every week, to everyone who listens, who downloads, who has shown us love on places like the Twitter or Instagram. We're on Facebook, working on Pinterest, and on the MySpace.
Wait. We're not on MySpace.
I said working on it.
Not actively.
That is not necessarily true. Love when we talk with athletes and authors and actors, but not very often do we get comedians.
No, so this is very exciting because I'm guessing we're going to laugh, but we're also going to have a chance to learn something too.
He is the funniest man in the room. Michael Jr., my friend, how are you?
I am awesome. You can probably tell by the rhythm and the bass of my voice that I'm a brother.
We like to ask a skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
Michael Jr. I get to do comedy all over the world and Canada.
What was life like growing up? Were you one of those class clown people where you realized that, you know, comedy was maybe the future of what you were going to do?
Not at all. Carter, I was not the class clown. Listen, even if you ever see me at like a party with a bunch of people there, it's not me. It's somebody who looks like me. I just want to put it out there. Yeah, I'm not that guy at all. In fact, the class clown, my dad had this thing that he would use often called discipline. So if I did any class clown work at school, when I came home, it was going to be uncomfortable, to say the least. So I was super strategic in school. Like, in order to say, only thing I would ever say in class that was funny had to be funny enough to make the teacher laugh, because I figured a laughing teacher doesn't send you to the principal's office. So I was super strategic in my comedy. I wouldn't do just anything just for a laugh, even though laughter really starts, it stems initially from wanting acceptance or being a class clown. That's where it stems from, and for me as well. So yeah, absolutely. Great question, dude. You guys are good at this. I mean, Holly, you are. I don't know about
with the other guy.
So would you say you're a little bit more of an introvert than an extrovert?
Absolutely. I am quite the introvert. I love people. I'm big crowds of people. Just, I know it sounds weird because I'm traveling and there's like 10,000 people at an event or whatever, but at least there's order to it as opposed to just a whole bunch of people just chaotically run around. Like, even with protests, I'm like, I'm all down with it. I protest on TV. I've made a picket sign and everything. I was like, hey. So, meaning I watch TV. I'm not actually there.
You grew up where?
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. In fact, it was the first place I ever did comedy was at a movie theater in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Me and my friends, we were just about to graduate high school. And one guy was going off to, he had a full ride scholarship for football. This other guy was going to the Navy. Somebody was going to the Marines. And they were like, Michael, what are you doing after school? I was like, I'm going to go make a sandwich. Like, I'm hungry. Like, I didn't have any plans whatsoever. And then we went to the movies. And in the middle of this movie, the screen goes blank. They bring the house lights on. And my friend, a German exchange student, said, I dare you go tell a joke. That's the best German accent I can give you guys right now. I'm just going to let you know that.
Appreciate the effort.
Yeah. And he dares me to go tell this joke. And the only joke I knew at the time was a dirty joke. But I had like 11 seconds to rewrite this joke in my head and clean it up. Hmm. Right. Because I didn't want to, even at that time, that's not what I wanted to put out. I wanted the audience to be entertained, but not, I didn't want to put that out there. So I go down there and I do this joke and the whole audience laughs. And then they want another joke and I don't got any more. So I know my instinct is it's time to get off stage. So I go sit down and security comes running in to kick me out. Literally, they come running in there. And then I'm sitting down already, so they don't know where I'm at. They're like, where's that person that was up on stage? And then this white lady, who I didn't even know, still don't know her to this day, she stands up and says, if you kick that young man out, I want my money back. And then these bikers with long hair and tattoos, they stood up and was like, you kick them out, we want our money back too. So the whole room stands up. Wow. And comes to my defense, really, because I just gave them a little part of me. Now, in retrospect, I can clearly see that was God giving me a glimpse of what he's called me to do. I used to just think it was about being funny, meaning that moment was, hey, I want you to cause people to laugh. What really took place in that moment is I used laughter to bring people together for something that was bigger than any of them individually. And that is what I do today, whether I'm on a Tonight Show on NBC or Jimmy Kimmel Live or doing TED Talks. I'm all about how can I use laughter to bring people together. And in this time of this pandemic where people have so much fear, we get to use laughter via this Laugh Your Mask Off tour coming right to everybody's living room. Right now it's time for the Canada tour. We get to use it to bring people together and to bring some understanding while we laugh.
You said you needed to clean it up a little bit. Was faith a big part of your life?
No, not at that point at all. So the only reason I wanted to clean it up is I had a friend, and me and him made a deal at probably 14, maybe 16 years old, that if I curse or he cursed, he could hit me in the chest as hard as he wanted to. like, and he was at the movies with us, and I didn't want to start what would later be known as MMA. That's not what I wanted to create. So I literally did it because I didn't want to get hit in the chest, and that would have just really been all bad. So now I didn't even know anything about when I lived in. I didn't know Jesus was in Michigan. Like, I didn't meet God until I moved to New York. Not until I was 27 years old. I didn't know anything about it. But my comedy was still clean. I always did clean comedy because once I had kids, I had my first child right around 20. I said to myself, and then when they got older, 3, 4 years old, I said to them, even though they didn't understand, I said, any comedy, anything I ever say on stage, you can repeat it. So it started with some just household accountability. But then once I met God and understood that he gave me this gift and he wants me to use it for him, at that point, it just was a smooth transition to, I don't just want to get laughs from people. I want to give people an opportunity to laugh because that's all I can do. This gift was given to me, and now I get to give it to others with some purpose behind it, because that's what I'm called to do, is to comedically inspire people to walk in purpose.
Was there any temptation to do jokes that weren't clean in the early days?
No, it really wasn't. Like, it was, it's similar to the way I write jokes. So if there's 10 comedians sitting on a curb, I don't know why we're on a curb, but if we're sitting there and a dog walks by, if a dog runs by and he only has 3 legs, and then all of us get up from the curb and we go into the comedy club, most of the comedians are going to talk about the dog they saw with 3 legs. I'm going to talk about, where's that other leg at? Like, what happened? Like, is there a flea on the leg right now? I'm talking about, man, we haven't moved in a while. I don't know what is going on. Like, I'm going to find something completely different to talk about, and I rarely am interested in the low-hanging fruit because that's where most people go. So I try to find that more unique angle. For example, a friend of mine was reading the Bible, and he said to me, did you know the Bible says you can get stoned? It don't mean you can get stoned. It means you could get stoned. Like, you're taking it the wrong way. You can't smoke weed. Let me just say that. That's not what you're reading right now.
Yeah.
So I'm able to see that funny. Even in reading the Bible, like, I see stuff in the Bible that is hysterical where most people may not notice it, and it's really because of my upbringing and what I was, what I'm attracted to, but also my desire to help people. Because I know once people laugh, their hearts are open, and then a deposit could be made.
Do you have an opportunity to listen to other comedians? Do you listen to some of the secular comedians and say, ooh, I really like that? Or do you kind of just stay away from that?
I got a lot of friends who do comedy who are not, who just mainly hit the clubs. And I started out doing comedy clubs only when I first started my career because I thought it was around. I didn't even know you could do comedy even at a church or be funny at a church. Because when I was a kid, laughing at church was illegal. So, I listened to other comedians for sure. In fact, I played the Comedy Store. I get there, and Chris Rock is there. This was some years ago. And he's performing. Brilliant performance that night for sure. And then I went on after him. I hadn't met him before. I went on after him, and he watched my set. Then afterwards, we sat down. I mean, we were talking over by the green room for probably 15 minutes, and then he got this look on his face. And this was a huge compliment at the time. He complimented my comedy, and then he had this look on his face, and he said, wait a second, you didn't curse, did you? And he was blown away by the fact that I didn't curse, but I was blown away by the fact that he gave me compliments on my comedy, but didn't even notice that there weren't any curse words in there. That was a huge compliment. In fact, I was at another club, and I had this couple, they started an argument in front of me. Because the wife says, I really appreciate how you didn't use any language. And then the husband said, yes, he did. And then the wife said, no, he didn't. And it just went back and forth. I'm standing right there in the autograph line with him. I'm like, hey, you could just ask me. But it's a huge compliment that people don't even notice what's missing.
Is there a difference then between doing comedy in a club and doing it in a church?
So for me, any comedy that I ever do at a club or a theater or whatever, it has to be clean enough that I could do it at a church. But any comedy I do at a church has to be funny enough that I could do it at a club. That's just really important to me. Like, the quality has to be there. So you won't, I know a lot of comedians who refer to themselves as Christian comedians, they get a lot of flack from non-Christian comedians or even from audiences in general. Like, a lot of times if people hear you're a Christian comedian, the next question is, where's your puppet? I'm like, a puppet?
Perfect.
What are you talking about? I'm not juggling Bibles. And a lot of comedians, a lot of Christian comedians who you would know, they actually don't want to be called a Christian comedian.
Yeah.
Me personally, I don't mind. I don't care what you call me. You can call me a Christian comedian. I don't, whatever. So for me, I actually see an advantage in it, especially working the comedy club. Because, and this is, I don't think I've shared this before, but here's what happens. Like, I'll be at a club, say the Improv on Melrose in Los Angeles or something, right? And let's say the MC introduces me as the Christian comedian. I'll go on stage. I won't say anything about him introducing me as a Christian comedian. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'll probably be like a 12. I'll just smash it in the audience perspective. But the truth is, I was probably an 8.
Yeah.
But the reason they think I was a 12 is because their expectations dropped significantly because of his introduction. So it actually works to my advantage. So if you want to introduce me that way, fine. Or if you want, like one time I had to follow Arsenio Hall started back doing some comedy recently. And he was at a club in Los Angeles. And I had to go on after Arsenio Hall. Now, Arsenio Hall is, the dog pound still follows him. Like, the whole audience was shaking their fists and barking. Rah, rah, rah. Like, oh my goodness. And then I had to go on after that. And I went on. And he's clean. And I went on and I turned, and the audience immediately, because of the timing and what I presented, immediately caught on to what I wanted to do. And we had an amazing time. So a lot of times people would think comedy club, whenever I perform at a comedy club, the manager would always put me on after the dirty act. So they have all the dirt go on, and then I would go afterwards. And then one time I was like, dude, just let me go on. They made me go. I had to go on first for some reason. And what actually happened is dirty, because they think clean can't follow dirty.
Right.
Actually, that's what they think. They think a clean act couldn't follow dirty. So they would always put me on first. I'm sorry, that's what I meant to say. But the truth is when I went on stage, dirty could not follow clean. They started realizing that the more I would come to the club. Because if you think about it, if you have two glasses of water and one is dirty and one is clean, you're going to pick the clean water.
Yeah.
But if all you have is dirty water, you'll drink dirty water and have no idea that clean water even exists. But as soon as you see a better option, suddenly that dirty water becomes even more dirtier.
You were living in Michigan. You'd moved to New York. Did you go to New York for the comedy scene because it's you were trying to get stage time?
Absolutely. I wanted to know if I was funny. Like, I'm in Michigan. I'm doing these jokes. People are laughing. I got one joke I used to do. I would say, my boss asked me for a 2 weeks notice. I was like, 2 weeks from now, you're going to notice I ain't been here in 2 weeks. Like, but I wanted to know if I was funny. And in New York, if you're not funny, the way they let you know is they'll say something like, you not funny. I wanted to really find out if I was funny. So I moved to New York City, and then there's a club there called the Comic Strip Live, and it's a really hard club to get into. They have an open mic on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock at night, and comedians who are new in town start lining up at like 6 o'clock in the morning just so they can put their name in a hat and be present in case their name gets pulled out the hat, and they get to do 90 seconds in front of Lucian, the manager, in front of him. It's really hard to get in this club. So I was finally able to get my name pulled, and it's time for me to get on stage, and this comedian named George Wallace walks in. Now, he's a well-established comedian, and everybody likes him and knows him, but the problem is I'm about to get bumped because he just walks in like, this dude is the man, and I know I'm going to get bumped, but this is where God shows up for the first time in my life. Well, this is where I noticed him. Let's just say it like that. The manager walks over to him, and he says, Michael, listen, George Wallace is here. Would you like to go on before him or after him? That never happens. You never get an option. It just doesn't happen that way. So I was like, well, let me go on before him. So I'll go on, and I got New Yorkers laughing. But not only are they laughing, he's in the room, and he's laughing as well. Then after the show, there's a bunch of comedians around him. They're asking him all these questions, and he leaves them, and he walks over to me, and he says, you know, you're funny and you're clean. He said, why don't you curse? I was like, I don't know, man. What if my grandmother walk in or something? That's the only thing I could think to say. Because I couldn't say to him, my friend might hit me in the chest. I'm a grown man at this point. Like, it wouldn't make any sense. But it just kind of stuck. And I still don't know Jesus at this point, right? And he said, you know what? You're funny and you're clean. I'd love for you to do a show with me and my best friend in a couple nights. I didn't know who his best friend was. It didn't matter. I'm pumped and excited. I get to do a show with George Wallace. So we get to the show. I get there, and it's me, George Wallace, Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm blown back, like, wow, this is going to be so awesome. So I do two shows and got two standing ovations. I ripped. I'm like, yeah. And then after the show, the club manager was a different club. He walked up to me, and he said, hey, Michael, you had a great set. Would you like to go to church with me tomorrow? Church? For what? I just got two standing ovations. Man, back up. I ain't going to church. That stuff was whack. Because I went to church when I was a kid. And when I went to church as a kid, that stuff was miserable. This dude on stage, he had some phlegm caught in his throat. The Lord said, act like you. Like, what in the world? Why would I go to church? So I was like, nah, I'm okay. And then 20 minutes later, his fiance asked the same question, but she was beautiful. Like, beautiful. I didn't even know pretty people went to church at the time. Because when I was a kid, when nobody pretty. Like, it just didn't work that way. So I was like, yeah, I go to church, man. Shoot. So I go to this church, and I can't even find the people who invited me. And I'm sitting in the back, and this church is huge. It's called the Christian Culture Center in Brooklyn. And I'm sitting there, and I'm way in the back, and I'm a little concerned. Like, is it going to get weird? They got Kool-Aid. Like, what's going to happen? And this dude comes out, and he's talking about Jesus. That's it. He's just talking. He's not screaming. He's not yelling. He don't got no perm. Dude is just talking about Jesus. Then he did this thing where he did like an altar call. And he said, if you want Jesus in your life, all you have to do is believe in your heart, confess with your mouth, Jesus is yours. And I wanted to go up. I got to be real with y'all, for real, Holly. Like, I really wanted to go up, but I was like, nah, I got to read the pamphlet first.
Yeah.
I don't know what this stuff is about. So I told myself I'd read the Bible before I gave my life to, because I don't know what this stuff, because we all know some Christians who are creepy. And I didn't know if it was the Bible making them creepy. I didn't know what was going on. So there's some creepy Christians out there. If you're listening right now and you can't think of no creepy Christians, that's
it.
Because it's you. You are the one. You are the creepy Christian. Your friends know it too, but they don't say anything. They just don't show up. So I get a Bible. Like, first of all, I don't even have a Bible. I'm at O'Hare Airport a few days later, and this lady just hands me a Bible. You don't understand. We never exchanged words. She just walked up like the Lone Ranger or somebody, handed me a Bible, and just walked off like John the Baptist's sister or something. I don't know how she, I don't know. But then I get this Bible, and I start reading it, and the first thing I read was the first page, was the copyright. The Bible that she handed me was made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was like, well, me too. Shoot, we got some stuff in common. So I start reading the Bible, and I'm going to church, reading the Bible, going. All I'm doing at this point while I'm living in New York, reading the Bible, going to church, hitting the clubs. So I'm literally putting in 12 to 14 hours a day reading the Bible, just digging in, right? And I didn't read very well, so that was like 9 pages a day. That stuff didn't make sense to me, really. So I'm reading the Bible, going to church, reading the Bible, going to church, and I'm literally, it took me 36 days to read the Bible. I remember getting to the part in Matthew where it said, Jesus died for me. First off, I didn't even know Jesus died for me. Like, for real, I didn't know until I was 27 years old. I've been to church before,
yeah,
but I didn't know. Nobody was explaining the way I could understand. Jesus died, like he died for me. I read it in Matthew. Then I turned to Mark, and he died again. I'm like, why do they keep killing him? And Luke, John, I'm reading the Bible. I'm like, I get to John. I'm like, Jesus, don't go in the garden. You know what's going to happen. What you doing? Like, I wish it was comedy only. I literally thought he died 4 times because nobody explained it to me. Like, I literally thought he died 4 times. So I go ahead and I finish reading the Bible, finish reading the Bible. I run up to the altar at that church, Christian Culture Center, like during the announcements. Like, I was like, I know you got a picnic, but listen, is Jesus here? That's what I want to know. So now I understand some stuff. Now I understand I'm not just funny. I'm funny for a reason. There's a purpose. There's a reason for me having a sense of humor. But even the setbacks I've had to endure, God completely uses that. So any listener right now, your talent, God has a plan for it. And it doesn't mean you have to be in the church to deliver. It just means that your requirement is that you have an open heart to deliver. And you can do it. Even your setbacks are part of your setups. You can deliver the punchline God has called you to. Somebody might need to hear your story. Somebody needs some encouragement. And you are the one. You are in proximity to that person who needs to hear it. So be prepared to deliver.
This year's definitely been an interesting year with a pandemic, with a lot of race conversations happening. And it seems like you've done such an excellent job of, you know, the word of 2020, pivoting, because you've been talking about laugh your mask off. And it's a very unique way of approaching comedy and sharing the purpose that you have. Can you share a little bit about what this is?
Yeah, so Laugh Your Mask Off is a digital comedy tour. So it's literally via Zoom. You get a ticket, and you and your whole family get to go. So one household had like 18 people last weekend when we did 6 shows last weekend. One household had 18 people in it. and there's, I don't know how many people watching in awe. So literally, you get a link, we're at your house, and we've split up my new comedy special that hasn't been dropped on Netflix yet. It's called More Than Funny, and you get to watch my new comedy special along with me and all these other Canadian households, and we watch it together. And then in between, we talk, we laugh, we have some fun, we interact, we talk about hockey. Not really, because I don't know that much about hockey. So we just have some fun. We do some interactive games. We do some trivia. And it's a full night of fun. But more importantly, we laugh because people really, really need to laugh right now. And there's always some encouragement. Like, even with this, even on the show right now, I hope that the people feel encouraged. So I never necessarily plan out exactly the encouragement. I really just kind of listen to what God wants me to deliver to that specific audience at that time. And it could be at the end, it could be at the middle. I'm just sensitive throughout the whole thing. So it's all about helping people understand what their purpose is, encourage them, and letting them know that you guys have something to deliver. There's something amazing for you to do. And even your setbacks, as I mentioned, is just part of your setup. People have a lot of setbacks. This pandemic and the racial unrest has set up, it feels like a setback. But it's like a bow and arrow or a slingshot. The further you've been set back, the further you can reach. You just have to know what to aim for, because you're going to hit something, so you might as well hit the target God has called you to. And those are some things we're going to be talking about and laughing in the middle of, right, like in the midst of laughter, we're going to have some fun and be inspired too.
You had mentioned about being a father. How many kids do you got?
I don't know, man. I don't always count them.
Carry the two.
You mean like in America, or where are you talking about? Like, no, I'm just playing. I have five kids. I got five amazing kids, man.
And they're how old? About-ish, if you know off by hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really don't know that. No, my youngest is so I have a stretch. I got, like, one who just recently was, like, a while ago got out of Pampers, and I got one in college.
Wow.
So, actually, it's the same one. She's brilliant. She's super smart.
Do they find you funny?
So, yeah, I have a stretch. I think they do when I pay for their school.
Gotcha.
Like, I think they're like, Dad, you hilarious. Thanks for this food. You must be funny. So, yeah, and even my youngest is kind of, like, even at the age, she's almost 3 years old, and she used to come, always leave her room and come get into bed with us. I'm like, this sounds cute, right? Oh, he's so cute. But she sleeps really wild. So all three of us together make a capital H when we're in the bed together. I'm like, you can't be in here. Like, I got to take you out of here. So, the one night I take her out and put her in her own bedroom. I'm like, I'm sorry, there's not enough room. You just got to sleep in here. And I lay her down. And she says, Dad, can you lay with me for a little while? And it's super cute, right? What else am I going to do? So I lay down. 1 minute later, I feel her get out the bed. I'm like, where are you going? And she said, there's room now. What in the world? What are you doing right now? Hysterical. So she has a pretty strong sense of humor, as do some of my other kids too, man. But dude, one of the greatest names I've ever been called is Dad. Hmm. Like, being a dad is the best. It is just completely the best.
You talk about your special that's going to be coming out with Netflix. Is it, like, how much work goes into that, and how difficult is it? I mean, if a special's a half hour, 45 minutes, or an hour, that you then have to memorize that many jokes.
It is a lot of work, but what you do is, if you know, it's almost like a story, and all of my jokes don't always go in the same order. I actually try to get super sensitive to what each in particular audience needs, even when filming a comedy special. Also, I have a visual. I visualize what my notes will be or what they are, but I just kind of color code them. So I'm not really thinking about the stories in particular. I'm just asking the question, what color should I go with next? And then I just kind of flow. And then more times than not, brand new jokes will show up right there on the spot.
As you reflect on your life, I mean, it seems like you've been through a lot, and it's an incredible story of how you came to know the Lord. Were there any why me moments that really stood out during your life?
I get to do comedy, which is great, but I had a shift that took place. I was outside of a club in Los Angeles. I felt like there was a shift. I felt like God told me, instead of trying to get laughs from people, because that's what I was all about, I want you to give them an opportunity to laugh. That right there changed everything, because now I'm not looking to take, I'm looking for an opportunity to give. I'm simply asking a different question. So even with your listeners right now, you're asking one of two questions every time you walk through the door. You're even asking a question of how can I get, or you're asking a question of how can I give. And if you don't know which one you're, if you don't articulate which question you want to ask, by default, you're going to ask, what can I get? So I go up on stage that night, and my mindset is, what can I give to this audience? I've been to this club a bunch of times before, but it's so much more relaxing now. It's almost as if, like, you can feel when somebody's trying to take something from you. I get up on stage, we have a great time. I leave the club that night, and I look across the street. We're doing autographs and stuff. It's the same scenario every time I leave a club. But this time I look across the street, and I saw a homeless guy. I had never seen a homeless guy outside this club before, ever. But that doesn't mean he wasn't there before. That just means before, my question that I was asking, without knowing I was asking it, was how can I get laughs from people? So why would I even notice him? And I was like, what about him? How could I give him an opportunity to laugh? And then you have to be careful what you ask for. Because 2 days later, this lady was in my autograph line. She said, hey, you ever think about doing comedy on Skid Row? I was like, no. I mean, maybe. I mean, why? What do you mean? A week later, I find myself on Skid Row doing comedy for people on the street. 2 weeks after that, we're in Montrose, Colorado, doing a show for abused children. Now I have a nonprofit called Red Blueprint, where we make laughter commonplace in uncommon places. And people are real. I'll give you one more story of why it's important to ask, what can I give? I'm doing an event in Sacramento, California. In the middle of my jokes, I feel like I'm supposed to make an extra deposit because I'm asking, what can I give? So I say that, then I go ahead and do some more jokes. I close the show out. I go back to my green room. 15 minutes later, security comes in and they say, hey, there's this guy who really wants to talk to you. So I walk out, they take me out of the green room, and there's a white guy, he got on like a wife beater, and it looks like he is high. But I get closer and I can tell he's not high. He's been crying. He has tears in his eyes. And I'm putting a book that's coming out in March. And I walk up to him like, hey, what's up? He said, hey, can I talk to you in private? So we kind of step to the side a little bit, but I don't even know this dude. And he says to me, man, you really... He said, I came here to get away from all of the mess that I'm in. He said, I really just came to get a laugh and get away from it all. He said, but you said some things that really have kind of shaken me. And he steps away from the crowd a little more, and he whispers a little bit, and he says, so I am wanted in three different states. I'm currently a fugitive, and I need to stop running. I want to turn myself in, and I'm wondering if you would help me do it.
Wow.
What? I am blown away that this dude has made a decision. So we go ahead and tell the security, and then I wait there with him till they bring the car around. I hug this dude. He gets in the backseat of the car, and it's like a scene from a movie where the dude in the backseat always looks at you as the car pulls off, and he's just, and I'm like, snap. But listen, if all I was doing was trying to get laughs, we probably would have never had that experience. He would have forgot about his problems for a moment and then went right back out there and no telling what. But I asked a different question. I said, what can I give to my audience? And most of the times it's laughter, but sometimes it's something a little more. Your listeners right now, there's gaps in whatever you're doing. What question are you asking in between the gaps? Are you asking, what can I get? Or are you asking, what can I give? I'm telling you, if you change the question, you change the game, you change the results of not just your life, but the people around you as well.
Watch out for his comedy special, new book as well, laughyourmaskoff.com and at Michael Jr. Comedy on all socials. My friend, appreciate you taking some time and sharing your heart.
You guys are awesome, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Big thanks once again to our good buddy and now hopefully best friend in the future, Michael Jr.
Yes, and don't forget, you can check out his virtual comedy tour online.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
It's just seeing some of the videos on the YouTube and Netflix special coming out, I cannot wait to hear more from that man. You can download on places like Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, on MySpace, on Pure Volume. Where am I missing?
Pretty much wherever your podcast, you'll find us. You can also head to faithstrongtoday.com.